Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on Nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at LexusofLexington.com. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Good morning, Philip.
Good morning, Ricardo. I have a question for you. Where are you going? You have a rolling suitcase with you today.
I do.
What is the story on this? This seems very odd. I've been walking behind you this morning as we came in here, and what's the story with this rolling suitcase?
I'm going to Madison tonight.
Okay.
For a wedding.
All right.
A parishioner of mine is getting married at the new chapel in the University of Wisconsin.
Okay.
And I'm going there. I hear that's not your favorite city.
No, not. I don't have favorite cities. I haven't spent a lot of time there. We talked a little bit about maybe something to do in Madison, and I said I don't have good information there. Mm-hmm. But you're going to be at the new chapel at St. Paul.
Yes,
that's very interesting. I mean, it looks like a beautiful space.
I haven't seen anything, but
you must be one of the first few sacraments actually being celebrated
maybe.
In mm-hmm. there.
I will ask about that.
Okay,
it's a very nice young couple, Gabby and Greg, and I'm very honored to be doing this. It's one of the treats of the priest. And I remember when I first started being a priest many, many moons ago, that weddings was not my favorite thing to do. But it has become, especially when the couple is willing to engage with you. We still have couples that they just parachute into the parish, and it's difficult because they don't even come to Sunday Mass, not even during the months before the wedding, which is a problem, I think. But when the couple engages, it's fantastic. So on Sunday, I'm baptizing in Chicago the child of a couple that I married. I have baptized their other children, and it's fantastic.
I love weddings. I've come, same thing. I was a little nervous about them going into priesthood, but I love them, especially when the couples are, you know, just engaged and honest and authentic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes people come from different ways of practicing the faith, maybe a little bit more casual, but just be honest. You know, my problem always with any parishioner is where, frankly, you get lied to and say, oh, no, we're here all the time, and it's just not true. It's fine. I'm not going to judge anyone, but just be honest.
In any sacrament, I think what bothers us the most, I think you would agree with this, is to feel used.
Correct.
To feel
always.
That it doesn't matter who you are. It's just that
right.
They need that service, to look at the church as a provider of services.
Right.
That's the problem in any sacrament, first communion, baptism, weddings. But the second they engage, the second they are honest and authentic, as you said, then everything changes.
And this goes both ways. So, you know, it takes a little bit of stepping forward on the part of someone who's approaching the church for mm-hmm. something. But at least the two of us, I know this might not be true for all priests, you know, we're very open as
mm-hmm.
well, you know, and very much welcome. We're going to work with you and do whatever you can. We're
yeah.
not going to turn someone away. But it always helps, you know, of course, when it's a mutual relationship.
So a few weeks ago, we had two guys and a first reading instead of two guys and a gospel. Today, we have two guys and a wedding.
That's right.
So
exactly.
Maybe we should go back to the purpose of this.
Yeah. So two guys and a gospel.
Yeah.
Once again, I'm Father Philip Bugacki. I'm the pastor at Christ King and St. Bernard Parishes in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin.
And Father Ricardo Martin, I'm the pastor at Sacred Heart Parish in Racine and also the vice chancellor here in the Archdiocese.
So we're going to read the gospel for the 13th Sunday in Ordinary Time. It's a longer passage. However, we felt it appropriate. There's a few things going on here within the gospel, and the shorter version, which you might hear at Sunday Mass, just might cut out part of that. So you might hear this one or a shorter version at Sunday. So where is this from?
We are reading from Mark chapter 5, verses 21 to 43.
When Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a large crowd gathered around him, and he stayed close to the sea. One of the synagogue officials, named Jairus, came forward. Seeing him, he fell at his feet and pleaded earnestly with him, saying, "My daughter is at the point of death. Please come lay your hands on her, that she may get well and live." He went off with him, and a large crowd followed him and pressed upon him. There was a woman afflicted with hemorrhages for 12 years. She had suffered greatly at the hands of many doctors, and had spent all that she had. Yet she was not helped, but only grew worse. She had heard about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak. She said, "If I but touch his clothes, I shall be cured." Immediately her flow of blood dried up. She felt in her body that she was healed of her affliction. Jesus, aware at once that power had gone out from him, turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who has touched my clothes?" But his disciples said to Jesus, "You see how the crowd is pressing upon you, and yet you ask, 'Who touched me?'" And he looked around to see who had done it. The woman, realizing what had happened to her, approached in fear and trembling. She fell down before Jesus and told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has saved you. Go in peace and be cured of your affliction." While he was still speaking, people from the synagogue official's house arrived and said, "Your daughter has died. Why trouble the teacher any longer?" Disregarding the message that was reported, Jesus said to the synagogue official, "Do not be afraid, just have faith." He did not allow anyone to accompany him inside except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they arrived at the house of the synagogue official, he caught sight of a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. So he went in and said to them, "Why this commotion and weeping? The child is not dead, but asleep." And they ridiculed him. Then he put them all out. He took along the child's father and mother and those who were with him, and entered the room where the child was. He took the child by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kaum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." The girl, a child of 12, arose immediately and walked around. At that they were utterly astounded. He gave strict orders that no one should know this, and said that she should be given something to eat. So a few things going on there. Where would you like to start?
I want to ask you a question.
Yes.
How many years had the woman been sick?
12 years.
How old is the girl?
Why don't you tell me? I'm looking at 12, my text here. 12 years. Okay. All right.
Do you think it means anything?
Well, tell me what you think.
No, what do you think? What do you think?
I'm not sure.
So I think 12 is the number of the tribes of Israel.
Right, right.
And numbers are used. I mean, I'm not a fan of numerology, but we do know that the numbers mean something in the gospel. Like 7 is the name of completion. It will be the number of the deacons ordained in Acts. 7 will be the number of the sacraments of the church. It's a number of completeness. 12 is the number of the Old Testament, the number of the tribes of Israel, the number of the apostles at the beginning. I think there is some meaning there. And I think it's the caducity of the way religion had been understood until Jesus. That's my opinion. So because we always have these miracles, and I think there is an invitation there to look beyond. We know Jesus could heal people. We know that even without trying, as in the story of the woman. But what else is the text trying to tell us? There is always a whole plethora of details that I think go beyond just the ability of Jesus to heal.
So this is a pretty good reason to read ahead the gospel before we come to Mass. We say that often, but even here, you know, I've read this for the first time in this, you know, this particular passage in 3 years in the context of the Sunday liturgy, and you caught me off guard a little. I think you're right. There's just a lot here about miracles, just to kind of contemplate and what Jesus does here. I really always go to that story of or the reality of the woman there with the hemorrhage and just touching Jesus. Mm-hmm. And that's, at least for me, that's where I kind of stop and I just think. And I'm not sure what kind of comes to mind there, just the importance of touch. I think, of course, about the sacraments within a Catholic context and, you know, just that very special reality of touch that's present in them and conveying God's grace and his love. Do you think Jesus is angry here in the case of encountering the woman?
I don't think he's angry. angry with the woman. I think he's angry with the disciples, but that would be probably another original, Father Ricardo's original approach to scripture. I don't think he's upset with the woman. He knows something has happened, and he wants to know what, which is interesting that he needs to go through this. I don't think he's upset, answering to your question, I don't think he's upset with the woman. He's upset maybe with the whole context. There's a lot of belief from those who ask him, from the woman. There's a lot of faith and belief from the Jairus, from the official of the synagogue. But there is little belief around Jesus. I think it's one of the things that you see in these stories. In both cases, there is a lot of skepticism.
Sure.
Except for the person who is asking for help.
That's a pretty good point. Skepticism, but also just observers, people here who are just sort of around, maybe curious, but not really believers. You don't see a lot of movement forward in faith, in a sense. I know that, that might be a little strong, too strong a way to say it, but you don't see a lot of kind of human movement forward here. It's just, you know, Jesus doing a lot of stuff and a lot of people standing around.
We always bring this down to our own experiences in our parishes, and I think that's a problem. We have lots of people that intellectually they believe, but then we need people to really act on the belief, to be real believers. And I think those Gospels could illustrate this.
And I would say even more and to add on to that, as part of being real believers, that we move forward. I think that's an important thing that you certainly emphasize in your parish. I try to in my ways as well, but to move forward. This portion of Mark's gospel that we're starting to read here now over these weeks, I know it continues for at least the next few weeks. It's Jesus moving on. He's doing a lot of things like this. He's teaching, he's healing, he's present. He's really moving, in fact, rather swiftly, I think, timeline-wise, and moving forward. And that's always the model for us as disciples as well, is to be on his side and moving forward as well through life, and not to dwell too much in one place. And often those places we dwell and we get stuck are those areas of hurt, of fear, of self-pity, and those things that are really not healthy for us. Jesus says we continue to move forward.
And Jesus tells the little girl, arise. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we are trying to convey here. We need to arise from our slumber, as that song says. Not my favorite song.
Not my favorite song either.
We agree on that. But yes, we need to rise up. We need to arise. We need to grow, to move on. I think that's a very important message. And I think that's one of the things I would like to preach this weekend.
There's a lot here. This is one of those where I think both of us will sit down and think about a little bit and pray about. All right. If you're looking for a Mass this weekend to come to Mass at a parish here in the Milwaukee area, archmill.org is the website for that. Masstimes.org is the national site. Or, you know, find the parish that's in your local neighborhood and head there and grace them with your presence.
And as always, if you know of someone who could benefit from this podcast, just let them know. We can be found at the Archdiocese of Milwaukee website, but in iTunes also, and any place you receive your podcasts. And thank you for listening.
All right. I'll see you next week.
See you next week, Philip.
Redbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
We want to help others, especially in places of strife, such as the Holy Land, where Christianity is dwindling by the day. But how to help? Here's an easy way. Buying products through the Holy Land gift shop. Every product you purchase at myfranciscan.org/shop helps Christians support their families and stay in the Holy Land. Olive wood, embroidery, spices, and many more authentic products from the Holy Land are available right now at myfranciscan.org/shop. The Holy Land Gift Shop, bringing the Holy Land home.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media. Find more about us at breadboxmedia.com.